episode 51 for June 17th. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
It's a great time to sell your house because inventory is low. Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty is a lifelong resident of the Silver Valley. She's a local realtor who's well-connected and knows every nook and cranny of our beautiful community. Contact Julie at 208-659-1764. She's your best friend in real estate.
I realized I wasn't wearing my headphones.
Oh, yeah? I never wear them.
Got no snare in my headphones.
Hey, guys, it's Monica. I'm back.
Monica's here, Josh.
Monica's got her own mic.
And I got my own mic now.
Mic'd up.
I feel like a queen.
Here we go. Do you?
I do.
You got your own mic.
I got mine. That's all I needed to feel relevant.
So, for those, we will be splicing in Monica's audio file afterwards, so you shouldn't notice anything on your end, but if you do, let us know.
But now you can listen for it and really nitpick it.
Yeah, really just...
Pick it out, see if you can figure out where we stop and start.
where we have to edit things in.
Oh, man.
Josh, Monica, what's going on?
I'll defer to you, Monica. I am overwhelmingly negative today.
What is going on? I don't know. How was your weekend?
My weekend was solid.
There we go.
I was given a miniature laptop to work on.
Mm-hmm.
I look very much like a gorilla at a... Small computer.
Riding a very bicycle.
Like, if you had that closed, could you hold your laptop in one hand, do you think? Could you, like, palm your laptop?
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like a child's laptop.
It even has, like, a textured pattern on the back.
Oh, it's a case. It's like a weird case thing.
Oh, I see.
I am a caricature of myself.
I haven't seen one of those white ones. Like, the only way it could get older if it was, like, holographic. You know, like the really old Macs?
Yeah.
That we thought were really... Granted, we thought those were really cool a long time ago.
Did you do anything fun this weekend?
You know, we kind of just kicked it.
Did you ride your bike?
No.
That's what I'm asking.
But I did order my trainer in my living room.
What kind of trainer did you get?
It's magnetic.
Okay.
And I can hook my bike.
All
right.
And it's quiet.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I can basically just... like pedal my bike and watch The Office now from the comfort of my
own living room.
Whenever I ride my bike, I always have to pee.
Hmm.
And it's like super inconvenient. I don't know if it's like a pressure thing or like a very...
No, weird... I guess, you know what? Now that you say that, I get like, I mean, if I run on a treadmill, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
So now, I had to think about that for a second.
Do you go before you go on a bike ride and you still have to go?
Yeah.
Is it just you're maybe staying hydrated more because you're going on a bike ride?
It's possible. It's very possible. But
I don't
like getting off my bike to go pee somewhere. Equal parts fear of someone stealing my bike.
Mm-hmm.
Equal parts fear of like, all right, I peed, I'm done, I'm out. Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
You got a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into this
challenge. Urine anxiety. Pee anxiety. I've got a shy bladder. I don't know. Whatever it is. But now I'll be able to, you know, stop whenever I want and pee in the comfort of my own home.
Anytime.
Yeah. And no one will see the sweaty mess of myself that I am. So.
Great. All right, let's move on to literally anything else.
Chance, what did you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend?
I dare you to top that.
Oh, I don't know if I can top that. Went to Avery.
How come?
Went down to Avery. Checked out just a... See the area, love Moon Pass. Grew up camping down in Avery, so.
That's the most wholesome thing I think I've heard on this podcast so far. Just wanted to take a cruise down to Avery.
That's literally what we did.
That's really sweet.
It was pretty great.
Can you pee in Avery?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and on the pass too. Went down to TFP's down there, that business that I wrote about a long time ago.
Yes, with the pizza.
Yes. Unbeknownst to me, they actually took that story and put it on the back of their menus. So, shout out to them.
Whoa! That's like when Guy Fieri eats at a restaurant. It's like, Guy Fieri ate here. It's like, Chance Watson ate here.
Chance Watson review.
Is there a caricature of you? Like...
No. Okay. No, but they did credit me. It says Chance Watson, managing editor on that.
So that's awesome.
Good for them. Shout out to them.
There you go.
Hopefully... Sounds like they're actually going to do... some 4th of July stuff down there, which is more than what Kellogg is going to do.
Here we go.
That's,
I can feel the rage.
That's a tease to our roundtable discussion today. We're going to forego an interview with somebody and actually have a roundtable discussion, partially on the decisions for events this year in Kellogg coming up this summer. And we'll also be doing a little talking about one of our front page stories from the Friday edition.
Yeah.
Regarding Canyon Elementary School. That's always a heated topic when you're talking about local schools.
Yeah. I'm so uncomfortable with these two topics, like talking about them, so I'm really excited.
You're really excited about it.
I've been looking forward to this all week.
Perfect.
How'd you spend your weekend? Panicking or worrying about the podcast?
I did. I just was like, I had to go to Eddie Joe's and blow off some steam because it was just the anxiety of, I knew it was going to be on there.
Gotcha.
I was like, I had to wrap my head around it, but.
Fair enough.
Yeah. We had a little bit of a girls' night. Hadn't been Eddie Joe's in a while. And so
I didn't know Eddie Joe's was open.
It is open, yeah. It was, there weren't a lot of people in there, but I mean, we were in there.
Gotcha.
That's like my favorite night at
Eddie
Joe's.
I know it's been for sale for a while. When
cracking a cold one with the girls.
Yeah, a couple of them.
There you go.
I don't want to plug, so you can edit this out if you want, but Eddie Joe's is closing at the end of the month, so their big blowout party is on the 27th.
Gotcha. Ooh.
So if you have any Eddie Joe's stuff or you want to come celebrate and say goodbye to it,
We'll give them one free.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. They're the only bar that carries my Michelob Cactus Lime beer.
Might be why they're closing.
That's, I don't know how to...
I don't know much about you.
Like, I don't...
I didn't even know that was a thing.
So many layers to you.
It's delicious.
I'll try it out.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the last place we can get it, I better.
It's a low carb, and it's delicious.
Okay, there's been too many free ad reads in this last 1 minute.
It's cool.
I'm saying. Just, like, go tear
it up.
That's just, like, a fun... Yeah, don't... Yeah, whatever. Michelob's whatever. But go down and party, because it's last time.
Say Eddie's is closing.
Michelob Cactus Lime. Sorry. It's actually part of their infusions line. It's delicious. And I will shamelessly plug it.
Okay, please call a Michelob Ultra rep to see if they would like to purchase...
I'll call them right now. Let's get him on the line. No, let's not.
Let's not do that.
Sweet.
What are we talking about today? Are we on Friday? Are we moving into it?
We're jumping to Friday. Friday, June 12th, headlines.
Yes.
Which we had this was a solid paper, honestly. I'm going to be real honest.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you over that horn you were tooting so loudly. Can you say that again?
So this is a pretty solid cover, not gonna lie.
Oh boy.
Had a lot of solid content.
Have you ever, I don't know, like, I don't remember this. Have you ever, like, done this and been like, I'm not really impressed with this paper. It's subpar.
We have five papers.
We've had five over the last
5 years.
That's like one a year. That's not bad.
Yeah. A couple of them. And it was more... when we were still a daily.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because...
in fact, I think four of them were...
Yeah, four of them were daily. One of them in particular, I can remember, there was a band that came to town, and...
Was it O-Town?
No.
Damn.
No, they were just... They were just here.
They were just here, and somehow...
Not even sure if they were playing or not.
They were.
Okay.
They're called, like, the Rough Cuts.
Oh, they played at...
at the Sunshine Inn.
That's right.
And they were really good, actually. We really enjoyed them.
Uh-huh.
But, like, I did an interview, I wrote the story, and then we went out to watch them, but all of our other stories, like, fell through. So we had, like, two stories on our front page, and, like, one of them was this, like... big spread on this, well, because it had to be, on this band that was, like, passing through to play at the Sunshine Inn.
So, like, wasn't even that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But, like, it was all you had.
Yeah.
If I remember,
was like, why the hell are we reading this?
I think the headline, I think it was between that and then the headline was that Moon Pass was opening.
Yeah.
I was really, the Daily was tough. The Daily was an incredible challenge. I mean, it's tough for... a large paper,
mm-hmm.
you know, Quarterly and Press, Spokesman Review, it's tough for them. We were the only, as far as I knew, no one's corrected me yet, but we were the only two-man staff to have a daily paper in the nation.
Brutal.
It was rough.
And that is the one... So the ones that we've had other issues with have been like, maybe the content wasn't super strong, But then the way it got laid out messed it up. Or, like, really weird nitpicky things that a lot of people might not even notice.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that one paper in particular stands out to Chance and I as, like, our worst paper ever.
It was pretty bad.
It was pretty bad. And, I mean, there was just nothing.
Or even when we had standalone photos that are... Oh, yeah. And we don't do that very often unless it's... There's a reason. Never do it to fill space.
Had an issue with, they love to go two stories on the front and then the biggest standalone photo they could put.
Like two stories up here and then this would be a giant photo.
Mm.
And
below the fold of the paper.
And that was their... That was their thing. Like front page like 3-4 times a week. So anyway, so we say we're pretty proud of one. Like we keep that.
All right.
We hold our self-promotion in high regard.
All right. I'm learning the scale.
Yeah.
So this is a good paper.
This is a good paper.
This has a lot of...
The only thing that would make this better, I think, is...
Viral content.
Yeah. If there was sports in it. And I know, like, if there was sports, this would make it a full paper.
Mm-hmm.
But we have everything else. We have local news, education, new business.
Well, it's a Friday, so we had an outdoor section.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a little bit of everything. The only thing that's truly lacking is sports in this one.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So, initiate stage four.
Let's initiate this discussion about...
Stage four?
Stage four. Right. Chance, you wrote this one.
We both wrote this one.
Chance and Josh, you both wrote this one together.
Yeah.
Why
is Chance's name so much bigger and at the top?
Well, mine's the same size.
Is it?
It's just lower.
Okay.
He's the managing editor, so he gets the... he's like the director and the producer. He gets to be.
Got it.
Makes sense.
Can you tell me about stage four?
Stage four initiated Saturday.
Saturday.
Really? Yes, Saturday. So going along with Governor Brad Little's, what is it, rebound?
No. Idaho rebounds.
Idaho rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The plan going forward to open up things after the COVID-19 pandemic. In stage four, the big one was long-term care facilities or nursing homes. I think that's other than that, other regulations got less and less for bars and that kind of thing.
Nightclubs
that those opened up as well.
Libraries.
Yep. Governor Little actually said that while we did qualify for stage four, it was close because we had a large spike in diagnosis, confirmed cases.
Yeah.
And it was shown that it's spreading to rural areas. As of today, Shoshone County is still COVID-19 free officially.
Yeah.
We've mentioned that several times on the podcast before that's probably not accurate, but no one has gone in from Shoshone County and gotten an official test and been confirmed. So
we have the old Abbott analyzer too. You go in, you get your results in 5 minutes.
There you go.
The old Abbott.
I think when word got out what is involved in getting tested for COVID, people were like, yeah, I'll just
F that deal with noise. It. Like, yeah, legitimately.
I'm not getting...
Tilt your head back 45-degree angle, and we're going to stick this Q-tip right into your cerebral cortex. We're going to drop your IQ points just by a little bit, because we're going to tickle the base of your brain. And then we're going to take that nasal pharyngeal fluid and run it through
we talked about this before, but both NHL and NBA players, there's like a small group of like dissenting players that don't want to do this just because they don't want to get that test over and over and over and over.
Yeah, I have two words for those athletes saying that.
What's that?
You can edit and post. Mm. I'm not going to say it. You would have to edit it in post. Mm-hmm, I won't say it. Do not steal my joy any more than it's already been stolen.
Hey, the NBA was the one who initially came out. It's like 50 players.
Kyrie Irving is just a baby, okay? And I hope he listens to the SMP now.
He's going to be so disappointed.
He wasn't
going to
be playing
this anyway.
He was one of the eight teams. The Nets were one of the eight teams that weren't even invited.
Hmm.
So, yeah. I'm not going. You were invited, Kyrie.
How do you really feel about that, Josh?
I'm irritated. Okay. I'm so irritated.
You need to bring your sports back, dog.
Uh-huh. Hey, I've got sports on the front page of today's paper.
Yeah, we'll get to that in here in a second.
Yeah.
So stage four is going.
I took the nursing home angle. Nursing homes are, while Brad Little basically said now is the time that you can reopen them, for visitors and things like that.
It doesn't mean that everybody's taking the
most of the nursing home and like nursing care facilities that are truly health based. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about places like retirement homes. Mm-hmm. I'm talking nursing homes, long term care, skilled nursing care. They're going to be slow and take things at their own pace, much like Mountain Valley of Cascadia in Kellogg. I talked to Emily Kulin, and her thought was is that they were rolling out a pretty comprehensive plan that they weren't even going to unveil until later this week. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to start bringing people into their facility.
Didn't they just win another award?
I mean, it wouldn't be surprising.
They had a... Yeah, they're doing well.
They always win awards.
We'll have to pull that up on their Facebook page. I
love writing the stories about the awards that they win. Yeah. They won that National Baldrige Award.
It's deserving.
And realistically, if Mountain Valley of Cascadia is saying, you know, be patient, take your time, do things the right way, it should be, everyone else should be like falling in the line behind them and following their lead.
Yep.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
We'll skip around the
we really can skip around a lot of this front page because we're gonna discuss it in the
Mixed bag for Kellogg events and the Canyon Elementary drinking water. We'll talk about that here in the roundtable discussion. These tacos are addictive.
Oh, muchachos, my Lanta.
Shout out to Luann
and Rob Werfel.
Yes.
I'm actually gonna go get some muchachos today after we get done recording this, because if you haven't had them, they're phenomenal. They're actually, I think, a little bit out of your wheelhouse, Chance. Mm-hmm. Monica, they're dope. You like guacamole?
Yeah, I like guacamole.
They make their own. It's pretty dope.
Good.
And they're like high end.
They've got some interesting stuff.
Oh my god.
That they're putting in there. Huh?
Filet mignon.
Mm.
Shrimp.
Tacos. Shrimpies. Little shrimpies.
Little shrimp.
Some shredded pork. Shredded chicken. And the one that I had that blew my mind.
So, for the people who have no idea what you're talking about...
Oh, I'll get into it.
Okay.
Barbecued duck. I've never had duck.
I'm not going to... I'm sure it's going to be good. I do not like duck. So, really? I would like to try it and see, but I do not like duck.
So, Muchachos Tacos opened at the beginning of last month, beginning of May.
Took the place of the old Blackboard Cafe.
Yeah, same owners of the Blackboard Cafe, Blackboard Marketplace now.
Todd's Bookstore...
Yeah, Fox and the Hare.
Fox and the Hare.
I don't know, the coffee shop.
Todd's Books and Coffee?
Maybe.
Something like that?
So they had the old space on Bank Street right there, just like two doors down from the Wallace District
Museum. Such a cool space.
It was a cool space.
They did a lot with a little.
Yeah, but they have done even more. Mm-hmm. So now Muchachos Tacos is open. You go in there and it's like a really... I don't know. It's very cantina themed. They got like luchador masks hanging on the walls. And for those of you who don't know what a luchador is, go watch Nacho Libre.
I was just going to say there you that. Go. Yeah, that's what pops in my head every time you say that.
Mexican wrestling is basically what that is. They also have like a skeleton mariachi band painted on the walls.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
That I think Luann actually painted herself. It was funny because I'd actually seen a picture on Facebook. They posted a picture of their duck tacos. And $5 a pop for a taco. A lot of people were like, whoa, that's a lot of money for a taco. These tacos are stuffed to the gills.
Like, so they're like, explain it. Like, is it like a street taco? Like those little tortillas that are like...
It's like a 6-inch or an 8-inch tortilla.
So it's bigger than your laptop.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
There's absolutely a photo on A1.
There's a photo on A1.
A6.
Okay. So, but they've got a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. When you think you're going out for lunch, you're expecting to spend $10 to $15 roughly per person, right? That's your lunch menu or your lunch budget. Mm-hmm. So you go there and you get two of these tacos and you're stuffed. Well, you got to get chips and salsa. And they make their chips in store, like in house, with the tortillas. They cut them up, and everything there is so delicious.
All right.
It is unreal.
You're selling me on it.
Oh my gosh, they gave me three tacos to try. They're like, here, you know what? Pick three, and I'm like, three, okay. So I picked the duck and I picked the shrimp. Shrimp is the cook Rob Werfel. Mm. it's his favorite. So okay. I figured if it's his favorite and it's his recipe, I should
try. You know it's
got
to be, yeah, mm-hmm. the chef's eating it for sure.
Yeah, and then I've never had duck. So, like, okay, let's try duck. And then Luann told me, hey, you need to get the chicken so you can try the guacamole. So,
all good choices?
Oh, my gosh. I left full and fat and happy, man. It was just beautiful. It's just, and it's a really relaxing, like, environment. It's just a stone's throw away from, like, their new spot, the mm-hmm. Blackboard Marketplace. So Rob and Luann are able to stay very involved
on 6th Street.
in both of these businesses. Rob,
they've done a lot there.
Rob's, the inspiration came from when Luann first met Rob. She was working in like the kitchen, like the kitchen manager for a resort.
Okay.
Or a food and kitchen manager mm-hmm. for a resort. And she hired Rob as a chef. And she'd asked him, like, if you could do anything, what would you do? And he said he'd sell tacos on the beach. We are lucky that we are getting his tacos in the mountains, because this dude wants to sell them on the beach. And they do pretty well on a beach. Mm-hmm. And the name is funny. I don't know if you guys ever watched the show Narcos.
Oh, Willie loves Narcos.
Pablo Escobar always greets his friends or his cronies as, like, hola muchachos. So they've been watching it. So they, when they're like, what do we name it? And they both were like, muchachos tacos. So they like
great.
That's where it came from.
I love it. It's so good.
That's
fantastic. Oh my gosh. Like I said, I'm going there today and my mouth is watering just talking about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It's delicious. It's not. It's cool because they're not stepping on the toes of, like, anyone doing anything else.
Right.
So, like, Hill Street Depot, you can get tacos, smoked meat, and stuff like that. But still, like, your normal street tacos.
Mm-hmm. Pablo's.
Well, and that's a taco truck, so mm-hmm. that's another, like, an expectation is different.
Sure.
Then you go to, like, Red Light Garage, and mm-hmm. they're doing, like, your mom's tacos, shredded or ground beef.
Sure.
These are, like, gourmet tacos.
Sorry. Keep going. I'll tell you about it later.
No, you're good. That's gourmet tacos. So, like, if you're looking for a gourmet option that's, like, also, like, kind of, I don't know, fun, because they serve beer there still, sure. and they also make, like, fresh, like, daily, like, homemade popsicles, mm-hmm. which is, like, totally in my wheelhouse. It's just dope. Go there.
I dig it.
Go to Muchachos, man.
I dig it.
What were you going to tell me, Monica?
You were just talking about, like, the different varieties of tacos, and there's, like, a TikTok, like, sound of some... It's called White People Taco Night.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the hard shells with, like, the shredded bag lettuce, and, like, there's a song about it. So when you were, like, describing them, I was like, it's not... It's the opposite of White People Taco Night.
Yeah.
It's, like, actually, like, real tacos.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so gross.
This is kind of random. I don't know why. Like, when I read this article online, though,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I thought Chance wrote it. And so when you just started talking just now, and you're like, yeah, it's not really, like, your thing. Like, I totally thought Chance wrote this article.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, really?
And I don't know what, like, normally, like, when I read both your articles, like, even if I didn't know.
You can pick up on the style.
I think I can kind of pick up on the style, like, more or less. Like, I wouldn't test that knowledge. But, like, so, but then after hearing you talk about it, like, you're very passionate about it. And you put your feelings into this, and I
there
feel
was a lot
now.
Of tongue-in-cheek journalism in this, because I inserted myself into the story.
A little gonzo journalism.
I even, you know, through the lead of the story was written in Spanish.
I see that, yeah. And then you deciphered it, or you translated it
at the
end.
Very end.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to know what it was, you had to read the whole story.
It's a good test, though. Yeah. I tested myself, and I'm like, I think I can conjugate the verbs and figure out what you said, so...
Taking those lessons from Miss Case or Mr. Flores.
Mr. Flores.
Mr. Flores, depending on what year you took Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So.
Another Kellogg High School reference.
Oh, yeah. Not Pissed Fizz. It's not Pissed Fizz.
Pissed Fizz.
Pissed Fizz. You'll never live.
We've got lots of home decor.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
That's funny when you guys can't talk.
It is hilarious.
When you talk so much that your mouth just stops working is really what it is.
That's
so.
Honestly what it is, yeah.
Hey, well, you should stop at Silver Light Tire and pick up your new Cooper tires during the summer promo rebate that goes from June 1st to July 6th. Receive up to $75 on select Cooper tires, and all rebates are mail-in. Don't miss out on this big-time offer. Stop in at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg or call 208-784-1181 for more information.
I've been seeing those ads a lot. I like it.
Low, low, low prices on tires.
So there's...
We're just cannibalizing commercials.
I don't. Yeah, no, it's great. I love it. So I don't know if this applies to this rebate or not, but like when I went in to get my tires like a couple of years ago, Jeremy was like, when they send you your rebate, it's going to come in kind of like an unmarked envelope, like pay attention. And I was like, whatever, you don't need it. Okay, like thanks for, you know, heads up, I'm no dummy. No, Jack, I threw it away. Like, I never saw it.
And so
I
know. Like junk mail.
Yes, but he gave you the heads up. So, like, if I don't know if it's the same rebate or not, but if you do that with Silver Valley Tire, really watch your mail. Like, even if you think it's junk mail, maybe check it out.
Yeah. Because
otherwise, you're going to miss out on $75. Or I think in my case, I think it was $100.
Those big brands, like, do that.
Just throwing a Benjamin in the trash.
Oh, yeah. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed to say that. You can cut that out if you want, actually.
No, big fan of that story. Personal references are the best.
Got to keep it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're jumping over to Tuesday?
Tuesday headlines, which...
June 16th.
Yeah, so you have the headline here.
I do have the headline here.
And this was kind of a,
Is this a cars?
Yeah, this was a weird Saturday morning situation that kind of just...
Yes.
Reared its ugly head.
Headline, iconic classic car stolen and recovered. Looks like them Duke boys were at it again.
Oh, God.
Had to go for
this has got your name written all over it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Coming out of, this was Saturday morning, reports came out that two individuals had broken into a residence in Mullen on the 500 block of Willow Creek Road. This residence was owned by Cliff and Nancy Arthur.
Yeah.
They are well known in the Silver Valley for having an extensive classic car collection.
And also for... They're one of their cars.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have the set of... They have the replica of the General Lee. What is that, a 69 Dodge?
I can't remember.
I should... One. Car people are, like, listening to this, like, dude, you don't know what the General Lee is. It's a...
I generally 69, don't follow cars.
69 Dodge Charger. And then that's its most well-known... sorry, I missed the joke.
It was a good one. And then I was going to pun Santa, but Monica didn't even look up. She didn't acknowledge it.
Sorry, I'm trying to read along so I can, like...
Did you guys hear it?
Participate. No, what'd you say? Said you generally something something?
I don't follow. So it's the General Lee. Mm-hmm. And I said, I generally don't follow cars.
Do you want to do the pun Santa?
Go for it.
Now
you got to do it now.
You have my full attention.
No.
All
right. I don't want to.
You double down next time, okay?
Yeah. I'm too hurt.
So it's a 69 Dodge Charger.
69 Dodge Charger. This car. So, but in addition to this, he also has the... I don't know the cop's name. What is the cop's name from the show? He also has the cop car.
It's not...
Like, of whoever the cop is in the Dukes of Hazzard show, he also has the cop car that chases the General Lee all the time.
It's not Haas.
Mm-hmm. Boss Hogg.
Boss Hogg.
Boss Hogg.
That's it.
Might be it.
No, that's the guy.
That's the bad guy.
The bad guy.
That's the bad guy.
So
somebody look it up. Yeah.
From.
It's a race.
Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Okay. He has that car too. He has the cop car, a replica of the cop car that chases it as well.
We'll see how in sync we are here.
That's just like one of the more notable cars of his collection, but he's got a bunch. So in particular, when these two gentlemen broke into the Arthur's home, they were able to steal the 1969 Dodge Challenger General Lee replica and an orange 1970 Dodge Super B that was also next to it, almost just as classic. So these two gentlemen, they stole the vehicles out. ATL was issued after the Arthurs called in the car stolen. They were heading toward Montana, so Montana authorities were alerted. Strangely enough, though, and I still think they're trying to figure this out, the individual who stole the Super B ended up being spotted on I-90 near Wallace, and they ended up pulling him over at the visitor center there, and he cooperated and gave the car back. And
he lost his nerve.
Maybe. Perhaps, yeah. They pulled that person over. That guy in particular, his name was Leif P. Larson, 40, of Port Angeles, Washington.
Dude, these guys just come over from Seattle.
I have absolutely no idea. And they're both out-of-staters because the other one's from Montana, strangely enough.
And they were working together?
I'm still figuring out. It's hard to stitch this together because the other individual who stole the Lee, he made it all the way to Sanders County, Montana. Where?
How far is that? Put that in perspective. I don't know.
So Sanders exactly. County is. I think that's near. That's past St. Regis.
Past St. Regis. Okay. Yeah.
Past St. Right, Regis.
Cool.
I'd have to see the map in my.
No, it's all right. I just wanted a general idea. Is that like. Like
Plains or whatever.
Should be. Yeah, I'm just going to Google it now. Sanders County.
So he made it all the way to past St. Regis.
Past St. Regis.
Maybe they were going back to their respective homelands. And it would make sense that someone from Port Angeles would not drive a car.
Oh, it's north. No, it's not. It's
Thompson Falls.
So St. Regis is Mineral County, but Sanders like goes above it. So that's like Thompson Falls. Paradise, Perma, Dixon, that area. In any case, so he made it over into Sanders County. So yeah, past St. Regis, because you go from Mineral to Sanders.
You have to turn.
Yeah, if you go on the 135. So he made it all the way to Sanders County. Ended up crashing the classic car into a tree.
Come on, guy.
And fleeing on foot with a rifle.
Oh God.
So whole nine yards, canines, multiple law enforcement agencies, they just fanned out looking for it. I found out later on that the big massive search was not what found him. It was just a lone state trooper who was kind of just he was just looking in an area they weren't, and ended up finding the guy, arrested him. He was compliant and everything. No shootouts or anything like that. That gentleman's name was Daniel F. Haslig? H-A-S-L-A-G-E. Haslig?
Beats me.
I'm not sure.
25 years old, of Montana. I couldn't get a specific city out of that. 25,
huh?
25. So that one took a lot longer, but they got him Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning.
So quick question. So yep. When I read this, and I might be confusing information, so just set me straight.
Go ahead.
They weren't going to release that second guy's name, but then they ended up releasing it? Or am I thinking of something else?
So when you read the first online version of the story, I didn't know. We didn't know
his name. Okay. I was just checking.
We didn't know his name. Because when I wrote that story at 10:30 in the morning, they hadn't arrested him
yet. Okay. So once they arrested him, they released his name.
Yeah. This is a new story. And I actually need to take this print version. Thank you for reminding me. I have to put that online. So they picked him up in Sanders County. They were both arrested. This is a direct quote from Lieutenant Jeff Lee with SCSO. Ultimately, the stolen vehicle crashed and the subject fled while armed with a rifle into the nearby woods. A perimeter was set up, canine units and a helicopter worked together with additional Montana law enforcement units to locate the outstanding suspect. So they picked him up. This individual is going to be charged for his stuff in Montana and then sent back over here. Whereas the Leaf guy, he's here in Shoshone County. He's being charged just with the stuff that he did here.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Super B is fine. Wasn't damaged at all. The General Lee, on the other hand, according to the Spokane Hot Rod Association, they spoke with Nancy. Apparently, the General Lee's been featured in a lot of the Spokane Hot Rod Association stuff. Quote, it hit so hard that it broke the motor mount and pushed the fan into the radiator.
Come on, man.
So I'm not a car dude. I don't know.
In those old cars.
It sounds like that's not good.
You have to, obviously we know from just experience, the older cars are built to last a little bit longer.
Yes.
Because the materials that they had available to them were much stronger. Mm-hmm. So he must have hit that tree.
Mm-hmm.
Going pretty dang fast and pretty hard.
Yep. But, so cars were recovered, people arrested. Unfortunately, the vehicle's damaged. I'm fairly positive that the General Lee's insured, so should be fixed. But
it's still a bummer.
How do you? I sit here and I think, what is the ultimate goal of this? Like, do you think you're gonna get away inconspicuously?
Well, you would have been for the meddling cops.
That was a Scooby-Doo reference. You
can hide that car.
Right, you can't hide the General Lee. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
The guy made the right move. If you're going for these two to steal these cars, don't take the one with the Confederate flag on the roof to Washington. Back to Port Angeles, that thing would have ended up in like the Chaz burn pile trophy.
Pretty much, yeah, that would have been definitely not good.
I mean, there's collectors who will buy stolen stuff like that, show it off. And
sure.
scrape the VIN number down.
It'd just be hard to, I mean, you know, it's not like a thing where you can part that out because then it loses its value.
Right.
In my head, anyway.
Yeah, I get, I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows? People do stupid stuff. My biggest thing is, how do they know, like, if they're not, none of them are from here.
It's another good question.
How did they know that these cars happened to be there? I mean, right. Yeah, we said they're in magazines. How do they know how to get in? Like, mm-hmm.
Like are they casing places? Yeah.
There was forced entry on that. I know that I was told that, but how they got in, I'm like, you know, they know how to, did they hotwire the cars? It right. sounds like they just used the keys that were right. nearby.
Which, so. I mean, for a lot of those, like, if it's in under lock and key, the keys sure. will probably sit in the cars in the garage so you don't lose them.
Sure.
But how did they know that they were there?
Yeah. Some good questions.
Like, that's hard to, like...
Some good questions. I think...
Let's dig a little bit deeper, boys.
Investigate.
We'll look into it a little bit more if it comes out. It's, you know, those details, it's tough when both of them are separated. Sure. One's in Montana, one's in... So they right. can't get a complete story. Yeah. So.
Sure.
In any case, so yeah, that was an interesting little story that happened, developed over Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That those cars in particular and the Arthurs, they're well known in Mullen, and a lot of his cars, not just the General Lee, are featured in, you know, any parade around the area and that kind of thing.
Sure.
So, and
I'm glad it's over quickly, though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's, the outcome obviously sucks for the one car, but it, mm-hmm. I mean, at least they got him back.
Right. Sure. Absolutely. No, I mean, they're also featured, like, back when the Comancheros, mm-hmm. you know, the yeah. Pinehurst car shows, like, all the,
yeah.
Cliffs are, you know, most of Cliff's cars are usually featured and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, very cool. Glad that nobody was hurt. Glad that everything was relatively okay.
Yeah.
Middle
of the page.
Middle of the page. You actually got to write some sports.
Is this sports?
Oh, gosh. It's sports. It's sports, Monica.
Tell me about sports.
Tell me about sports. Oh, let me tell you something, Mojo.
These are like... We're getting a lot of energy from you. We got Muchachos Tacos, and we
sports.
Got when we started doing the podcast today, it was a little touch and go, but we are really just checking all the boxes for you, and I feel like you're just like thriving now.
You know, this laptop can only bring me down so
far. It only weighs like an ounce.
It only weighs an ounce, you know, and I'm a big fella.
It's a nickel's
which
worth.
Is again part of the problem. So I had a chance to talk to Barry Larson. He is the head coach of the Silver Valley Baseball Club. They're playing the American Legion schedule. Uh-huh. A lot of teams from Coeur d'Alene and stuff like that. And
explain to people the American Legion League.
So I'm not a baseball guy. In fact, as sports go, baseball is pretty low on the old totem pole. Uh-huh. But,
really?
It's sports, and I'm happy to...
Anything is...
Yeah, anything at this point. So the American Legion schedule is, from what I've gathered, a competitive league that allows kids who are maybe a little bit more advanced in their local little league groups, and things like that. It allows them to play a pretty competitive summer schedule.
Uh-huh.
And there's really odd age restrictions that I can't remember, but I know like kids who just graduated from high school can still play on the American Legion team.
Okay.
Whereas like you can also play on if you're like 14. So like 13, okay. 14 to like 19 or maybe even 20.
I mean, that's kind of cool because like if you're going by skill level,
yeah.
then you have like
yeah, and there
a
might
really
be
good
some...
14-year-old kid that can hang with a 18-year-old,
yeah.
like heck yeah, they should play
and,
together.
And because baseball is one of those sports that's like usually like one-on-one
uh-huh.
at every different interval and is more of a strategy and IQ game than per se a basketball or football that is
strength and finesse.
Because like physically, if you talk about like physically, like being built, like baseball is where you kind of have more room for like
fluctuation. Yeah, there can be some disparity there.
Uh-huh.
So. At this point, it's just, you know, getting the seasons in its infancy. The team is 1-3 to start out in four games. And they're playing a tough schedule. I mean, they're playing one of the teams, the Coeur d'Alene Lumbermen, which is like one of the premier Legion teams in the area.
Okay.
And then they play like Post Falls, Spirit Lake, some teams in Moscow, Montana, places like that, Sandpoint. It's just a way for kids to get out and play ball.
Right on.
And at this point, like...
When's their next game, Josh?
Well, they had one, I believe, Monday, but I'm not sure if it got rained out or not.
Okay.
I don't know when their next game is, but I do have their schedule. I attached their schedule at the back end of the story. So okay. If that bled over,
people can check that out.
Yeah.
It's
so,
on A5.
Yeah, it is on there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like their next game is scheduled for June 18th here in Osborne.
So you're listening to this on Wednesday, so it would be tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. And they'll be playing Sandpoint. Every game on their schedule is a doubleheader. So we put the time of the first game. The second game, usually there's like a half hour break between games. But yeah, no, I talked to Barry Larson and, you know, him and, Nate Watcott are the two guys coaching the program. Both awesome guys with lots of coaching experience, dealing with kids, stuff like that. I think after the sports drought that we've been on, I think it's really nice to have sports going again. And I think you're going to see, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw a really big turnout for cool. this season, just because people are so hungry to watch.
You were talking about even giving it some coverage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if it hadn't been raining yesterday, I probably would have gone out there and just seen. I don't know if they stayed playing.
So it might have just rained out.
Yeah. But it's real cool.
Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to
some
it.
Some good news.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need that.
Good news is always good.
Cool.
Right.
What else we got? Oh, gosh. VFW.
There you go.
Josh, you wrote this one.
I did. I had a chance to speak to the new VFW post, 1675?
Yep.
Commander Chris Marker.
Just Mr. Sunshine.
Yeah.
Himself.
Yeah. It was a fun conversation with him. I know you're making his dry personality is one of those ones that...
He's
known for how dry he is.
It's like the best thing, a little bit, I won't say the worst thing, but like it's definitely hard to read, but he is...
The first time you meet him, you definitely walk away thinking that he is just...
Oh, he hates your guts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he wishes death upon your family.
Right.
But after a couple of
you weeks, understand that that's him at all times.
Yeah.
He's like Raymond Holt.
And yeah, he's such a... yeah! That's a really good comparison.
He's Raymond Holt.
Also, but he does have that dry sense of
humor. I've never been so happy in my life.
It's like such a good soul of a person.
Yes.
Hard worker. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Willing to give you the shirt off his back. He has taken over as the commander of the local VFW. The VFW here in Osborne is one of the, I don't want to say few remaining active veterans organizations. But it really is. And he's just trying to get them back to normal is really what it is. But he's got some fun and fresh ideas that he wants the community to get involved in. Bringing back the breakfasts. Let's see, what else? He wants to start doing potlucks on Sundays to watch football games. So you show up, bring some food, and watch a Sunday night football game there.
Okay.
Like a chili cook-off. I mean, he just wants to start infusing the VFW back into the community and bring that...
Give it some life.
That partnership back together. He's going to start targeting some other veterans because, you know, realistically, the VFW has historically been made up of a bunch of Vietnam vets that are, you know, in their 70s now. But, you know, we have guys like Desert Storm vets. Mm-hmm. We have
Iraq War,
War on Terror, all that stuff. Those are all veterans. And we have several people in their late 20s and 30s and 40s that should be members of the VFW,
yep.
You know. And it's important for the tradition to carry on. And Chris is definitely happy to be that guy and help him get going.
He is all about getting people involved.
Yep.
And he's like the perfect guy to do that, to pursue that.
So the VFW meetings they're going to be regularly scheduled again, fourth Thursday of every month. Mm-hmm. And the VFW breakfasts are the fourth Saturday morning of every month.
Okay. So if you're a veteran, can you just show up to these? Like, what's the procedure
If you're a veteran, I think you show up, and I'm assuming there's a discount, but like if you're a community member, you can show up.
So anybody can show up.
Anyone can show up to the breakfast, and then if you're a veteran, you can show up to the meeting. I'm not sure how the...
Okay, I didn't know like
the
what the process was for like to be a part of the club, or if it's just like, yeah, you're a veteran, like come help us.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But I know like the breakfast, you can take a family of five out for breakfast for like less than $30 and it's good food, and you always leave full. So
I miss the breakfast. Like, I remember the
Lions breakfast.
Yep.
Pinehurst Lions.
The best.
Yep. Same kind of thing. So check out your, make sure you just keep an eye on it. We'll be in the calendar. We're getting the calendar going again.
Community calendar.
Spoiler alert.
We are getting
calendar's coming back.
Hang on to your seats. You got to give people a warning next time, Josh.
I'm so excited to get the calendar
pull up,
back,
you
got
to tell people to pull over.
Oh, poor Chance. That is a labor of love. Once you get it going, it's pretty... It's not as difficult.
I know, but we're working from square one again.
Yeah,
so
starting
if you're listening and you have a calendar event or have had a calendar event in the past, please email me at cwatson@shoshonenewspress.com.
Mr. Watson.
Let me know if you want your event in the calendar or want it continued to be in the calendar. Because I think I'm going to go through all the stuff that I have listed and see if it works, but there's a lot of unknown stuff that I don't know that made it through the pandemic.
Right.
So please let me know. I would appreciate that so I can have the most accurate calendar possible.
Mm-hmm.
We've got another little notice on the front page here that the Central Shoshone County Water District, I hate that they threw county in there, will be repairing two leaks on the main water line on the south side of McKinley Avenue. Water will be shut off today. As you're listening to this, so this will affect customers from Main Street to 3rd Street in Kellogg.
Oof.
Mm.
And they didn't say didn't say how long.
No, me. Yeah.
Yep.
Sidebar: public hearing for the EMS district this week. That is an incorrect headline. That is a public hearing for an ambulance district scheduled for this week. The Shoshone Board of County Commissioners is hosting a public hearing. We've talked about. The ambulance district, gosh, till we're blue in the face.
Mm-hmm.
This public hearing will be probably the first opportunity for the county to actually hear public comment. Last week, they did go around. The commissioners went around to all the local city council meetings.
Mm.
Let the kind of told the city councilors what was going on, what the plan was, explained the petition and everything going on, and did ask for comment from them. I talked to County Chairman Mike Fitzgerald. He spoke, from the way he spoke, there were no real complaints or concerns from the cities. And I think most of the groups seemed pretty supportive of the idea. This is all in regards to the EMS Corporation canceling their contract with the county back in March. And the county has since been kind of scrambling to figure out what they're going to do. Fortunately, some citizens stepped up and got a petition. 73 signatures instead of the only needed 50, which seems like such a low number until you start looking into the steep criteria that goes into allowing one to sign said petition.
Sure.
Like, you have to be a property owner in Shoshone County in good standing. So no back taxes. Like,
and if you don't sign the petition, then you won't get an ambulance that comes to you, right?
I don't think that's how it works.
No? Okay. I didn't know. But, I didn't know.
Basically, they're trying
to... It's only like 70 people that are getting an ambulance. Monica thought that was the greatest thing.
73 people.
73 people.
73 people paying 100% of those taxes. That would be brutal.
That would be a lot, but you have exclusive ambulance services in Shoshone County.
Services. That public meeting is set for today, Wednesday, 1:30 at the courthouse.
Yep.
In the commissioner's chambers.
June 17th.
June 17th. They will be allowing public comment. It is a public hearing. So if you have questions, comments, concerns, make sure to show up to that. I know that will be an interesting... I'm interested to see what the community response is. Because anytime you talk about raising taxes, there's a little bit of a...
And very sadly, this is only when people generally care, unfortunately. This is a very important issue.
And likely will make it through because people's vanity and concern for their own safety.
Sure, because we've said it multiple times. At the end of the day, people don't care if it's from Fire District 1, District 2, the EMS Corp.
When they call 911, they expect
you want somebody to show up in an ambulance.
And you want them to be happy, well-trained, comfortable, like you want them to be as pleasant as possible so that whatever they're helping you with can be as pleasant as possible.
Sure. I mean, and it's shown, I mean, fire departments, they share the title of, you know, fireman, firefighter, EMS. But I mean, it's very apparent, like when you come to law enforcement agencies, People very much always confuse officer and deputy. It's just a cop who shows up. They don't generally know what the jurisdictions are. Mm-hmm. I think most people know that Kellogg has a police force, but they don't understand who responds when or what jurisdictions are and that kind of thing. Again, if someone's breaking into your house, you don't care if it's from Kellogg PD, Pinehurst PD, Osram PD, Shoshone County Sheriff's Office, ISP.
You just want somebody there.
So, yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see. Right now, the city levies about $86,000, or the county levies about $86,000 from the community. It sounds like they're going to have to bump that number up more towards the $125,000.
Okay.
Which will help them avoid falling into the same pitfall of debt that the EMS Corporation fell into.
Mm-hmm.
Through no fault of their own. Quite frankly, anyone who knows anyone knows that there are just some people who don't want to pay their ambulance bills,
mm-hmm.
their medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expensive. Admittedly, they're expensive and it's a lot to pay. But, you want them to be able to respond when the time comes. You got to be able to pay when the time comes. So that is an issue.
Yep.
But should be an interesting meeting.
Absolutely. Last story on the sidebar on the front page. Small story that I wrote about the Wallace Rotary donating to the Wallace Food Bank. This story, I already knew the Wallace Food Bank side of this story because I had written a story about them at the beginning of the pandemic. About
was that you
them.
And Fleming?
Yeah.
Fleming. I do remember that.
That's a throwback or a callback to our April Fool's episode.
Yeah.
You and Fleming.
Uh-huh.
So you wrote about this at the beginning. I remember you writing about this at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yes, so I wrote about this most recently. So last week, Wallace Rotary President-elect Alan Williams presented the Wallace Food Bank and, in turn, Wallace Harvest Foods with a check of $350 to support their efforts for supplying food to people, those in need in the area. The reason Harvest Foods is involved is something that I've already talked about before in a previous story, that how the food bank prefers people contribute to them is that you go shop at Stein's and Osborne or Wallace Harvest Foods, and the staff there has put together pre-arranged food bags.
Oh, okay.
Full of non-perishable food items that can sit on a shelf. And you go in, when you're checking out, you can purchase one of these bags, and then they'll just take the bag off of the thing and put it on a prepaid shelf. And then when the food bank is ready, they come and pick up those bags that have been purchased.
Perfect.
And that helps them fill up their stores at their distribution sites in Wallace and Osborne.
That's great.
So
nice
this,
and easy.
This $300, $350 is going to go toward that, and also food vouchers as well. That allows people who need the food bags, they can also use the money on a food voucher to pick up things that are perishable, such as milk, eggs, meats, that kind of thing. So,
got it.
To date, this year, the Rotary Club, Wallace Rotary Club, has donated over $1,000 to the food bank. So that's a neat little story. Just wanted to recognize when local communities help out local community, or local groups help out local groups. I should mention it didn't make its way into the print product, but we shared on Facebook. Sometimes you guys are fun on what you guys like to like and comment and share on our Facebook. We posted a photo of Wallace Harvest Foods finishing their parking lot.
Incredible.
I mean, there's nothing like a good patch of paved asphalt.
It's a nice
play basketball.
Smooth, nice. Pretty sure they'd be Sports. Upset with you if you tried to play basketball in their parking lot, Josh.
They'd probably come out and play me.
They'd be like,
because Wallace
shirts versus skins.
Yeah, you're gonna just challenge them. We're gonna play you for the skin.
If
we're gonna
we
play
win,
you.
We get to play on.
We're gonna
this
play
court
you for the
anytime.
Court.
We're gonna play you for the whole grocery store.
They'll just walk out. We're gonna play you for the court, and they'll be like, "This is not a court."
Play it's you for Bank Street.
Yep.
We're gonna Streets. Play you for the center of the universe.
Whoa! Stakes are high.
Winner takes that manhole cover.
The Monstars versus.
And just take it back to it as a trophy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the center of the universe is about 10 miles that way, but we took
this photo. This photo of just a new parking lot at Wallace Harvest Foods got 200 reactions, reached 3,000 people.
Do you remember how terrible that old parking lot was?
Oh, it was bad. It was bad.
You had to, like, click in four-wheel drive because... like a cartoon caricature of a bad road.
Oh, it was real bad.
Like, in a Disney movie, the wheels would have, like, extended down and
that's fair.
Up.
Like an old time... Like, Mickey's driving an old-timey car that he had to crank, and he's, like, whistling along, like, bumping along.
Some Steamboat Willie action.
Very much so.
Yeah, that's right. Prohibition era type
Prohibition
dirt road
cartoons.
Thing.
Okay, fair enough.
It was a Prohibition type parking lot.
Fair enough. Josh, it's not in the dummies that we received, but your EPA story also.
Oh, it's not in the dummies. Wasn't deemed worthy of the front pit. Just kidding. No,
trash. Just
I had to. I got to talk to EPA's Region 10 director, and if I say his name wrong, I apologize. I believe his name was Chris Hladick.
Mm-hmm.
Hladick, which Hladick. Hladick. Whiskey.
Just go with it.
Yeah.
He'll let us know, I'm sure, when he listens to this with his friends.
The Bunker Hill Superfund site was featured in their annual accomplishments report for 2019. $42 million spent in the Bunker Hill Superfund project last year, including a bunch of that being on the central treatment plant, which we have covered pretty extensively.
Yes.
It's really cool. It's worth covering.
It's an impressive facility.
Yeah. The tour of it was mind-blowing, some of the stuff that it did. This year, they're not spending nearly as much. They're spending about half that, $20 million. But that should they should see the end of their paved roads project. They should complete it if they can get the 39 road segments done that are scheduled to be done. Just another example of the stuff just kind of... I think it's working towards its conclusion. There's a lot of stuff in the outlying areas that is still being fixed. Some mines that just have to be cleaned up. And the hard part, I think a lot of people always laugh. Back when the project first started, there was such a rush to clean up the ground zero portion of it where like people lived. And then they started moving to the outlying areas. Well, those areas they started with are likely recontaminated because of, you know, water runoff and gravity and how that whole works.
Right.
But I think they've gotten to the point where they've done enough work that they're able to start from the top and work their way down. And they're seeing some success. So, but that being featured, we were featured as one of the projects that they've seen the most success in, the most progress. They're hoping to, you know, get the paved roads done and stuff like that here in 2020.
Right on.
Yeah. Very cool.
Forgot about that story, actually, because it wasn't on our...
It wasn't on... Yeah, it wasn't on our what do we call those?
The front page tear sheet.
Yeah, tear sheet. That works.
Question. Can we take a break?
Sure.
Can we... My laptop is about to die.
Okay.
That's an issue. I think we can take care of it, though.
Can be. Well, Josh is about to read the ad, and then we're going to transfer into the roundtable discussion anyway, so...
Beautiful.
Josh, what do you got?
Oh yeah, if you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. They are now open Thursday through Monday from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. and their craft beer is complemented with quality, creative, and rustic food. They've also added some new items to the menu. They love everything about beer, studying it, making it, and most definitely drinking it. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
Perfect. All right, that segues us perfectly into our roundtable discussion. Regarding events in Kellogg and the Canyon Elementary decision going on.
Yeah.
So let's jump into that.
This week's roundtable discussion is brought to you by Prospect Fitness Studio. It's a great time to start working out because energy at Prospect Fitness is high, high, high. Check out Prospect Fitness Studio on social media or stop by the studio at 110 South Division Street in Kellogg for a workout treat. Prospect is your best friend in fitness.
Monica, where did you come up with that totally original
ad
script?
I don't know
where
these ideas come from, guys. Like, it's just scary to me.
It's an idea machine.
I know. I just crank them out all day, you know?
It's like someone puts, like, inspiration in your mouth hole. That sounds terrible, actually. We just keep cannibalizing
okay.
all of them.
Sarah still has the biggest gaffe on the show.
What?
Sarah Murphy.
I think you said Sarah Still.
You did say Sarah Still.
No, I just said Sarah.
No, the first time
you said... Oh, you meant like Sarah Still
has. Oh, Sarah Still has.
Continues to have.
Gotcha.
Got it.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. Yeah. Yes, Sarah Still is a person. No, not referring to Sarah Still. Sarah Murphy still has.
I was like, we pull one of these every time we do the podcast where he's like, it's like ambiguous and then I gotta like decipher
it.
It's not my fault. There's like there's like 19 people with the name Mike here, okay?
Well, there's a few Sarahs too.
There are a lot of Sarahs too.
What did Sarah Murphy do?
When she came in with the salty meats.
Oh. Yeah, everyone likes salty meat in their mouth. That was a dandy.
That's a direct quote.
I tell you what, there's still
out of context direct quote.
Easily that's a top five moment on the podcast. Mm-hmm. The first time we ever read the Outlaw commercial with the "You can't beat Carla's meat"
tagline. Also, right? Also great. We'll have to talk to them. We're actually going to talk to them with their new owners. Excited to see the Mullen Corner becoming a coffee shop too.
Yeah,
that'll be cool.
Definitely do for your 1 year anniversary of this podcast coming up some greatest hits. Make your top fives.
Fave fives.
Yeah, love it. Doesn't have to be just
we
this.
Could do that at the end of the year.
Ice creams. Do your top five ice creams.
Oh, I do love
top
it.
Five coffee drinks. Top five tacos.
We try not to do top five of anything right now.
We did it once and then people got mad because we didn't officially rank them.
We just said this is the top five in no particular order.
I mean, that's just how you feel. Yeah. It's not like the official stance.
Which is perfect because that's what we have to do here with this roundtable discussion. Yes. It's just our opinion. This is not an opinion.
Good segue.
So uncomfortable.
This is our second roundtable discussion. You guys liked the first one so much that we thought we would approach another great couple local topics.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah, we did get good feedback on that.
We did, actually. So we are here to talk about, let's start with Josh's headline or side rail story from the Friday, June 12th edition, a mixed bag for Kellogg events.
Yeah.
Why don't you read to people what happened and then we'll get into it.
All right. So this actually kind of boils, it goes back to a city council meeting that was Wednesday night, where the Kellogg City Council kind of made the decision that they were going to limit their large gatherings to 50 people or less until July 8th. Then after that, groups needed to submit a approved plan for hosting their events that are larger than 50 people.
Okay.
So what that basically did,
they punted.
Yes. They put the onus on the groups that were
hosting these events,
outside of their arbitrary deadline that they set, which isn't now arbitrary. I figured it out. So the July 8th deadline that they set for this is their next city council meeting.
Right. I see.
There are no meetings in between. They're not discussing it at all in between.
Yeah. So, at first,
so people have time to submit something, and then they can talk about it again.
So at first, I thought it was arbitrary. Mm. I was very much of the opinion that this was an arbitrary, but it's not. Then on Thursday, the Silver Valley Chamber of Commerce met to discuss. It was their monthly chamber meeting, and then to discuss kind of the city's decision. With all of the organizing that goes into planning an event, mm-hmm. And the city putting that July 8th moratorium on when they can go past 50, it made the most sense for the chamber to basically say that they just weren't going to put on a day-long 4th of July celebration.
Gotcha. That's your opinion. It made the most sense. We've had Facebook people saying otherwise.
Well, no, that was the chamber's opinion.
Gotcha. There was no way for them
to put on an event, doing all the things like getting a marketplace set up, organizing a parade, vendors.
With the time frame and the amount of work that it would need.
The various spots that have to be filled to put on said celebration. And I think a lot of people don't realize the behind-the-scenes work, because in theory you think you call people, you set them up, but there's insurance, things that have to be set. There's lots of things.
Oh, yeah.
The next one that was discussed was the marketplace, the community market. Mm-hmm. Last year it was
Which generally happened every Thursday.
Every Thursday. They had planned on reducing the amount of weeks. I believe it was to start in early July this year, and then run just until the end of August, I believe.
Yeah, maybe. It's going to be a short run.
A short run, but the city wasn't terribly comfortable with them having it in the park. And that section of the park that was used for it is not the most conducive to having a large group of people. It's routinely pretty swampy.
Very swampy, yeah.
And not really, outside of the grass being mowed, not super well maintained.
Mm.
There was discussions of, hey, could we, you know, maybe put in a stage? Chamber coordinator Chris Marker was going to build a stage, and it would be a permanent fixture there and could be used, but the city kind of didn't like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So then there was a possibility of moving the market to Silver Mountain. But due to Silver Mountain having some different insurance needs, it wouldn't work out there. So as of right now, the market is kind of searching for a home. We could have that information by the end of this week. But the one that really kind of took all of this and made it divisive was
How
to proceed with Silver Hoops. So right now, Silver Hoops falls on July 25th and 26th. That's when it's scheduled to happen. It's always the last weekend in July, which is about 2.5 weeks past the city's July 8th deadline. Now, that's 2.5 extra weeks to plan an event, which, again, people not understanding the behind-the-scenes work, they have instead taken to the, if we can't have the 4th of July, we shouldn't be able to have.
So let's get into the discussion now.
Well, right.
Are we so outside of the story now?
This is the angle that's being taken.
I just want to, we started with the news aspect of it.
We're getting there. And that's been a popular opinion shared by some people, even at the high levels of the city government.
Mm.
The city is also operating under the the guidance and authority of the Panhandle Health District,
mm-hmm.
who understand that the event being outside, where temperatures are high, and you know, fresh air and all that jazz, make the COVID much less dangerous, especially now that we know that it's not as easily transferred from surface to person. But playing basketball, there is contact. But again, it is what it is. So that kind of brings us full scale. That's the city's.
So that's the story.
Because also Silver Hoops attracts a multitude of people from outside.
Correct. That's another problem that they have.
Which is one of the things with Shoshone County having zero confirmed cases.
It's a concern.
Inviting people in for a contact sport has some people rattled.
Sure.
So that takes us right to where we are. And
currently,
let the opinions.
So we put out a poll.
We did.
We put out a poll that was
200 votes, I think.
Yeah, over roughly. 200, roughly. I'm trying to pull it up right now, but our
internet's
not doing so great.
I know as of this morning when I looked, the option to hold the event was still at like 76.
So can you pull it up?
I might be able to get it on the old.
I'm trying to. Let's
pages
see.
We'll, manager.
We'll just
app.
Race to each other. I need to get off
but
the Wi-Fi.
In the interim, so we put out a poll.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
How should the city of Kellogg handle the Silver Hoops 3-on-3 basketball tournament given the given Idaho's current COVID-19 situation? Out of 203 total votes, 152 voted allow the chamber to hold Silver Hoops 2020 as normal. That's just like how it has done every other in the year in the past. No consideration of the situation at all.
Sure.
21 votes for require the chamber to enforce special health and safety protocols at the event. And 30 votes for deny the chamber's event request to hold Silver Hoops 2020. So,
is the poll on the website connected to that poll on Facebook? Are those like the same count?
Same thing.
Okay, yeah. Just checking.
So what was our percentage? 75?
74.8% voted to allow the event as normal, 10% with health restrictions, and 14% with cancel.
Yeah.
So, let's get into the discussion of it. Presenting both sides of this argument, obviously it's not as, it sounds like most people are in agreement that they want the event to happen, especially judging from the results of our poll.
Right.
there is that small group, and it's Josh, you and I have talked at length about this off of the air, because we understand the argument of people who want to cancel it in the sense of the cold logic of, if you want to stop the spread of a disease, yes, the best way to do this is to cancel all events. Not, it's not picking on silver hoops. It's so everything. It comes down to, are we willing to risk it? Most people say yes. Yeah. Because, you know, judging based upon what's happening right now, the risks involved, our current zero count, it sounds like people are willing to risk that. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't, but it sounds like most. But there is no arguing with the logic of, if you cancel all of the events, you know, whether it be Silver Hoops, Pioneer's Days, whatever, if you cancel all events, yes, that is, logically speaking, that is, you will limit the spread of the virus, for sure. What it comes down to is, are we willing to risk it, and is the risk necessary? And I think at this point, with everything else opening up, kind of doesn't make sense to be the lone wolf on this issue of, everybody else is doing their events.
So I would, and Monica is a member of the chamber.
She is. A director for the
director,
chamber.
A director.
Well, and member, right?
Yeah.
I am a member.
Member and director.
And a director.
There you go.
So she is in an interesting spot here because as a resident of the city of Kellogg, I would assume that she would prefer every major event that we're supposed to have would happen. But as a person on the chamber, you know, she has to also kind of be mindful of the current goings on. And
well, Monica, what do you say?
So I'm just giving, prefacing.
I think you're trying to help me out here by saying that, like, I'm probably not going to give you, like, my raw opinion on this.
A disclaimer, so to speak.
Yeah, and that maybe sounds a little bit cowardice because I don't want to stand behind how I feel, but just as, like, my personality type, I'm not good at picking a side because I try to be as objective as I can and try to see it from both
sides. That's good because that's our job. That's our job to do that. So,
truthfully, I don't have a really, really strong stance on this anyways, but I'm not going to give you, like, the uncut version of all my feelings just because.
I have no strong feelings one way or the other kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, what's that from?
Futurama.
Oh, there we go. I was like, what's that an impression?
It had to be a quote.
It's such a tough one because there's so much emotion tied to this.
Yes, very much so.
It's not just...
And that came out during the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
You could see that there was a group of people, predominantly one guy who's been organizing Silver Hoops for some time, who is really not okay with the way the city's handling it.
And that's another level to this. Like, there's definitely, like, if you scrape aside just the black and white, like, should we have it, should we not, and you go down on the layers of, like, how it was handled, like, there are some things that are problematic there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, everybody's just, it's a big deal for the community, and it's, you know.
It's the second biggest event in the valley.
Yeah.
Consistent. I mean, we talked about Frontier Days earlier on, but that's not in this conversation.
It's not a consistent event. Like, and it's, you know, everybody's been cooped up and it's just like all this tension has been building. And Josh, I know it's super important to you, like, you know, like it's a
familial thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So
let me throw an element in here as well. It's one of the things that we've talked about, Josh and I have talked about, is that the county officials and all of the mayors have been having weekly meetings or bi-weekly meetings, whatever.
Right.
Whatever it may be. And they discussed it. And it's very important to them to stay united in whatever stance they take.
Right.
And Wallace has already set the precedent by canceling everything. I mean, they just announced that they're canceling the Statehood Day Parade. Obviously not one of their biggest events, but...
Still.
They're still continuing their trend of canceling all of their major events. They will have some sort of pseudo Blues Fest, right. But it's nothing compared to what it was supposed to be. So Wallace has set the trend.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they said that we're not going to contribute to this one or the other. And to be fair, even the mindset in Wallace is different. From me just being on the ground talking to the Wallace business owners, they seem very divided. It's not like a resounding, you know, the Wallace business owners want this and the city is going against their will. It's a it's a fairly divisive issue,
right,
in Wallace, where they can't really agree on whether or not they want to do these things. So that's another, I'm not saying it's the reason why. It's not like, oh, Wallace did this, so we have to.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's a factor in the decision making from like the city,
well, so to speak. Well, that's what happens when you give, and like no opinion on this either, but like that's what happens when you give power to the local government, or mm-hmm. like even like county to county, it's yep. like you have this like fluctuation. So we talked about last time, you look at Kootenai, and I was like, we're not Kootenai, and we kind of mm-hmm. think, or I guess I won't speak on behalf of you guys, but like Kootenai's kind of like the uppity, like bougie, like if there is
a county to say is bougie in North Idaho, yes, it's Kootenai. Now, you know, compared to Spokane,
like Ketchum or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah, it's or even
it's different. But
yeah,
like
it's totally
us,
in comparison. But sure, well, in terms of like the Panhandle five northern counties. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's like if
with Bonner coming in a close second.
Yeah,
so well, like if far distant second, rather.
If they're cutting loose a little bit, and then we're over here, and we're still having tight regulations, like so you get that fluctuation.
Sure.
But I do really like, and I kind of been pondering. This is what I've been trying to shift my focus on when trying to talk about this. Is not necessarily canceling it or going forward with it. Like, why does it have to be like this hard, fast line of either one? Like, where is the middle ground there? So it's like, can we move it later? Can we do something where, and like, this is, I'm kind of looking at Josh because, again, like, on the outside, I'm like, it is good for, I see all the benefits, I see all the negatives to it, but Silver Hoops has never been something where I'm like, just like drooling over it. So I don't, but that's me. And that's like as an outsider.
And before Josh chimes on that, I want to add this layer of it too, is this art, there is no right or wrong answer in the sense that we won't know who's right and who's wrong
right.
until the decision is made.
Right.
Like until we hold Silver Hoops and we wait 2 weeks after Silver Hoops, then we'll know who was right and who was wrong. If Silver Hoops is held and then Shoshone County has 12 confirmed cases of COVID-19, all from people who were at Silver Hoops, then yeah, the city's going to have the last laugh on this.
Right.
At the end, but if everybody's fine, everything's great, everything moves along, then maybe the precautions were going above and beyond than what is actually needed.
And I get that. And then like from a chamber standpoint, also, I guess I should throw this out there as a disclaimer. Nobody is trying to say what the city of Kellogg sure. should do. Like nobody at all.
Oh, it's not even. I don't.
Like we're like that's. It's just a, like a chit chat about it.
I don't think anybody believes for a second that it's like this. Like the city of Kellogg. It's not like the city of Kellogg has a history of like having it out for Silver Hoops.
Right. No, no, no.
You know,
no.
Like, that's and then, now they like, just have a convenient excuse. Like I genuinely think. And as I mentioned, as I prefaced before, it's hard to argue with the cold logic of yes, you're 100% right. If you stop this mass gathering of people from happening, there is a less likely chance of the virus being spread. I mean, it's just hard to argue with that.
Right. So Tara Lodi, who's a chamber president, did a video just kind of updating everybody last night. And she just wanted to make it clear mm-hmm. that as the chamber, we are not encouraging people to, we're not trying to tell the city of Kellogg what to do. Like, the, like she said, there's, you know, sure. there's like kind of, we're just polling people on it, but my question is, you know, I think someone brought this up, and this is like kind of third hand information because I wasn't on the call for the City of Kellogg meeting on Wednesday. But I think Andy Helke maybe, and I don't quote me on that, said, you know, what are the other options to where maybe it's not a 3-on-3. I know it sounds lame, but like, is there a way where we can do like a horse tournament or like a free throw tournament to find that middle ground? And maybe it's a little bit more local. Like it's just like,
sure.
You don't want to be like, no, you're from Washington, you can't come. But like, where can we compromise to where we can still have it?
And unfortunately, it sounds like the vast majority of people aren't interested in a middle ground solution.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it sounds like it's either we want to cancel it or we want to carry it out. No strings attached, no precautions made or anything. Let's just do it as normal. And that might be influenced by, I mean, just where we live. I mean,
yeah. But if you look at so I went back and looked at the poll from when you guys did the poll for canceling Blues Fest, and maybe it has to do about like the timing of the poll.
That was a little closer, yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is like that was spread out more where everybody was kind of like, eh, whatever, like sure. about Blues Fest. But now
everybody's like,
oh yeah, everybody's saying
absolutely we should do the event. Silver hoops, and like that comes in. You know, you're looking at the information mm-hmm. you're presenting, mm-hmm. which is we don't have a lot of cases. But why don't we have a lot of cases?
Sure.
Because
we're doing things right. Yeah.
Because we did stuff. And that's the thing, is you're never going to go, if you don't see any reaction out of anything, it's never like, hey, you did a great job protecting our state. Like, sure. It's like, we could have done this and we could have done that. Sure. We should have done.
Oh, it's the places where it's a hotbed makes the news. Shoshone County hasn't even been mentioned once in this discussion because we haven't had a problem here.
Right.
And that's unfortunately just how the news works in general. Generally speaking, I mean, Josh, you can attest to this. On a grand scale, generally speaking, our negative stories tend to play better with people, get more clicks, follows, likes, that kind of thing. We're not biased about it. It's just how it happens. And we do our very best to try to put positive news in the paper consistently. But I mean, numbers don't lie, and those positive, while we will still continue always to put in positive news when we can get it, it's by and large negative news. Just
that's a bummer.
It is unfortunate, but that's just how it works.
So what do you think? Is there go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Josh. You've been quiet. We know your opinion on this. We know that
I was quiet. I wanted to hear everyone out.
And I was mostly, I mean, my opinion on it is, we'll get to mine in a second. I was more of trying to present all sides of the argument.
Yeah.
So everybody's informed while we're giving our opinions.
So the real tough part about this whole thing, I called Chance on Friday night. I was fit to be tied. There were several people I wish I could just like reach in my phone and choke. Because at the end of the day, sometimes I struggle with people's train of logic.
I did miss you're right. We did miss that one argument of the fairness argument.
And that was the one that bugged me, is that people were saying, you know, if we can't celebrate the 4th of July, then why can we have silver hoops? Well, it's not that anyone's trying to take it away or said you can only have one or the other.
Sure.
Because again, like, this sounds super terrible. If the chamber was presented with a you have to pick one or the other, unfortunately, I think the chamber would probably go with silver hoops because it's the second biggest fundraiser for them for the year.
Right up against
right
their
after
auction.
The auction. Yeah. You know, so that's not the stance anyone's taken. The real stance is that the July 4th, which is not an arbitrary date for us, every year July 4th they celebrate Independence Day. The city put the July 8th cutoff there. And then silver hoops is 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks later.
Sure.
Like 3 weeks on the dot later. So it's not, there was nothing about it is sinister, nefarious, picking one or the other.
Right.
No, but objectively,
right.
looking at the data,
I will play.
That's how they're looking.
I will play devil's advocate on this. I don't agree with this, but I will play this role. The 4th of July is an event that all people of all ages, of all age groups can enjoy. And
yeah, but if you're at risk, and you shouldn't be out anyway.
Sure.
Whether it's watching fireworks.
I'm going from a fair perspective in the
right,
sense of like,
you can't necessarily be fair in this when you throw the COVID, when you talk about math,
sure.
Like a variable, the 100%. COVID variable in is what changes this.
They're two separate arguments, totally. Because the city is not taking this argument.
No, the city has.
The city is not saying like, oh, because you're not doing 4th of July, you can't do silver.
But the, driving,
they're taking the COVID approach.
The driving force in a lot of the votes where it's to cancel it are derived from that train of logic, which
sure.
doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, and I think a lot of them don't take the COVID approach. Like, they don't care. They're willing to take the risk in both.
Right.
They simply think it's not fair that because that 4th of July gets canceled, but silver hoops continues.
So we wipe the table clean now and talk strictly 3-on-3.
Yeah.
This is an event that we didn't have nearly the information a month ago when per se Wallace canceled Blues Fest that we do right now. We're still holding at zero. We've learned in the last 2 weeks that COVID-19, if you are asymptomatic, it is hard for you to transmit to another person.
Sure.
If you are an asymptomatic carrier, it is incredibly difficult to transmit to another person. transfer from surfaces used to be a hot button topic. See Kellogg Playground for that argument. Mm-hmm. But we have since learned that transferring from non-organic surfaces, plastic, metals, things like that, very difficult.
Sure.
Incredibly difficult.
Yep.
We've learned that the COVID-19 virus does not do well in excessive heat.
Mm-hmm.
So the end of July with a 3-on-3 basketball tournament, excessive heat.
Always regularly hot. Yep.
Yeah. So all these factors playing in, that's just going off of what we know from the science.
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to the state side. Governor Brad Little comes out and says, hey, it is my recommendation that, it's a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to host an event with more than 50 people, you go right ahead now. That right there, that recommendation, in my mind, he is getting information from the people.
Sure.
And this is not disparaging Andy Helke.
I mean, we barely almost got to stage right. four.
Right. This is not disparaging Andy Helke, but I would assume that the people who are providing Governor Little with his recommendations and advice and mm-hmm. his green light are a little bit higher up on the Panhandle Health or the Idaho Health Department sure. food chain, and thus their opinions weigh a little bit more in the grand scheme of things.
I would also, but I would add to that point, though, that the governor is not, unlike Andy, who only looks at it from a purely scientific health perspective, sure. the governor is forced to weigh economic options.
Economic, mental health.
It's not the first time. I mean, in the next topic that we're going to talk about, we should get to that here soon. I mean, the EPA set arsenic levels at 10, but they wanted it 5.
Right.
But they couldn't do it at 5 because the economic cost would be too high for people.
Sure. So, you are now permitted to host gatherings. And this isn't like specified indoor, outdoor.
Mm.
This is any gathering over 50 people is now allowed via the governor's recommendation.
Mm.
Silver Hoops is 100% outdoor with maybe 1% happening inside the Scout House, which wouldn't even be used this year because of ventilation.
Sure.
The Scout House will not be opened this year
sure.
due to ventilation. So you move your registration tent outside or into the gazebo
sure.
or something, and that situation is rectified.
Mm.
So many things here are working in favor of hosting this event.
Mm-hmm.
New developments in knowledge, the governor's thing. Realistically, the only thing standing in the way
mm-hmm.
is, and I'll take the hard approach and the hard stance here, is the city of Kellogg and what is being perceived as an inherent fear of...
Sure. It's that cold logic we talked about. It's hard to argue with that.
I don't know that it's the cold logic, though, because I feel like...
Gosh, if you cancel the event, the percentage of people getting... You have to
cancel everything.
Agreed.
And they haven't canceled everything.
Agreed. I'm not saying that that's my stance. I'm just saying...
Right. What are you...
that like, cold logic of it.
What are they letting slide through?
So in terms,
and I'm honestly, I genuinely don't know.
So in terms of if everything has to do with recommendation mm. and they don't have to follow governor's recommendations,
mm.
they could stop church services.
Yep.
They could.
They could have canceled graduation.
They could have. Yeah. They could have hard canceled graduations.
Mm-hmm.
They could have hard. They could really enforce the amount of people going into sure. grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
There
are definitely.
Like, there are yeah. things that they could have done. It seems like now that we're at stage 4, mm. suddenly they are like, whoa, we don't like stage 4.
Sure.
We were happy with the other
cases stages. Have spiked. We've had our first confirmed death.
In Kootenai County,
sure, absolutely.
Of a 70-year-old.
Somebody who is at risk, absolutely.
In his 70s.
Yep.
So absolutely fitting that at-risk population.
Sure.
Now, I don't know about you. But when I think of 3-on-3 basketball, I'm not usually thinking about people in the at-risk category.
Sure.
So that really is where it boils down to me. Right now, science backs having a 3-on-3 tournament. It really does.
That's subjective.
My only question is, like, how do you feel about... There are two things that pop in my head, and that's if we're drawing people in mm-hmm. from all over...
That makes me nervous. But like, I'm not going to go if I'm worried about it. That's the thing.
Sure.
Is like, you can choose not to participate.
I think you have to yield the point that this is not, you can't take the logic side of it. It is not logical to do this in that sense.
The second part is,
I'm saying the risk is worth it in my eyes. In my personal opinion, the risk is worth it and we should hold all the events. That being said, the cold logic of it is no, the logical thing to do is to cancel everything because that's the best chance of decreasing the risk.
So I'll respond to that, but what's your second point?
My second one is just like the close contact. So there's like spit and there's sweat. And then there's, if you're looking at science and stuff like that, I mean, it all changes day to day.
Then if little Billy gets it, then goes home and hugs grandma.
If it's spread by aerosol and there's like sweat, and like, I own a fitness studio, I understand I run the risk as well. So mm-hmm. like there are precautions you can mm-hmm. take, but it's, again.
So to that point, mm-hmm. you run a fitness studio, and if that concern, that exact concern, mm-hmm. aerosols, sweat, I'm not saying you necessarily have people sweating on each other that touch each other while they're working out.
Right.
But it could happen.
Sure. Incidental contact.
If that is the case, then why didn't this particular city government take a hard stance against that?
That's a very good point.
In terms of cold logic, like you said, you are correct if you take the cold logic stance.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I don't take that stance. I'm just saying that is...
But if they take it now... They're choosing to take it now instead of take it.
I'm not saying it's not hypocritical. Absolutely.
That's the part that I think a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, it's not hypocritical. It's definitely hypocritical that they say it for this event but not others, or going to the store or something like that.
That you have to wait an entire month to figure out if you can have it or not.
Right.
Right.
That's what drives me insane.
Sure.
So then the planning aspect aside, and I do have one little leg up in the discussion that you guys might not have. I have been on the Silver Hoops planning committee.
Mm-hmm.
I do know what goes into making it happen. There are several things that can be done, like just like Hoop Fest does in Spokane.
Sure.
Balls that are specific to every court. Sanitize them down after every game. You can adjust time limits to lessen exposure.
Sure.
And... as far as people coming in from out of town, this event does attract people from out of town. Don't get me wrong. But I would still say, as a person who's been involved, you're looking at a 70-30 split. 70% of the people there are local. 30% are from out of town. And right now, there's just enough of a scare that it wouldn't surprise me.
Again, I'm just playing devil's advocate on this. Again, I already said my opinion, but it only takes one.
It does only take one. But the people who are going to come out...
Mm-hmm.
are going to come out no matter what. The people who are that afraid are going to stay home.
Sure.
Well, and you know what you just reminded me of? Like, my opposite of that, like, my rebuttal to my own thing is Silver Mountain already opened the door.
Sure.
Yeah.
So absolutely. It's like
there are already people coming in.
And so it almost goes back to our discussion from the Kellogg Playground, is that, I mean, if everyone's united on this and we're still all agreeing and playing by the same rules, absolutely. But... Again, the reason why I think the risk is okay is because the damage has been done.
So
the fact that we still, in fact, there might be less resistance to your point right now if we were not at zero.
Which is why I think we're seeing the fluctuation in numbers.
Sure.
From poll to poll. You go back and look. I was genuinely a nervous wreck about the idea of Blues Festival, which, unfortunately, numbers don't lie. More people come from out of town for Blues Fest than they do for Silver.
Agreed.
There's still a healthy local presence, but I mean, not only are the acts coming in from out of town, but then, you know, they bring so many people.
But like today,
I would have said cancel Blues Fest.
Sure.
Based on the information I had a month ago. But now, a month later, now that we know that surfaces aren't as big a deal as they once were touted,
right?
Temperature is a controlling factor here. And
if you've ever been to Blues Fest, it's so hot.
And the thought that asymptomatic people, which are the vast majority of COVID carriers,
mm-hmm.
have almost 100 times more difficult time transmitting the virus from an asymptomatic person to another person, who could also be asymptomatic as well.
Correct.
So that is where, I mean, at the end of the day, the science really does back... allowing this.
The science is there to allow enough of a risk than say we knew about a month ago.
And you know
you're
what?
Right, 100%.
People go to Silver Hoops and tear their ACL. People go to Silver Hoops and get concussions. There's no liability. The city doesn't assume the liability.
No, I don't think that there's a legal argument here.
Oh, that is part of the discussion.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
I spoke to Mayor Mack, who did say that.
I think it would just be more of a black eye. Like you and I have talked about before. If we're at zero cases and it is confirmed that because this event was held and we got our first COVID case, that is a black eye to the community.
You would still have to prove it.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying it's a steep hill to climb.
This sounds terrible. This is going to sound terrible.
Power through it.
You're a 21-year-old guy who plays Silver Hoops. 2 weeks from Silver Hoops, you're like, I got a fever. Guess who's not going to test you?
Probably not.
Not Shoshone County. And I guarantee you, 21-year-old Shoshone guy with a fever is going to go get some Tylenol and go to bed. He's not going to
drive his butt to Clinton County. Well, we've already talked about this in general about COVID.
So yeah. Our number, I guarantee you, even if like 10 people from Shoshone County catch it at Silver Hoops, our number stays at zero because they don't go get tested.
I've already said it multiple times that I believe we've had COVID already in Shoshone County. It's just gone undiagnosed.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no way around it. Absolutely.
You and I, we're sitting in this room as people who believe that we both had it.
Agreed. 100%. So
I think this goes back to the same thing that we talked about with the playground. I think it's a bit of an overreach. And I think it's driven by fear.
Yep.
And not as much rationality as I would like to see from our local government.
Okay. So I've already said my opinion, you guys.
Let's have it. Have Silver Hoops. Okay. Have the 4th of July.
I agree. Monica?
You've got to be wishy-washy on this.
Okay.
I do not think we should have it as is necessarily. I think that we should, if anything...
Precautions need to be in place.
Push it out a little bit. And I say that because if you want to make any kind of comparison, which we shouldn't because everything is different on a different level, if they're going to have, I don't know how I feel about this either, but Hoop Fest in Spokane, obviously a much bigger event.
They are holding.
Yeah, but they pushed it back to August. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's room to move this out, to plan it better, and then you give the city whatever time they need to figure out what they're doing, and you can put together a really good comprehensive plan for what they need to do.
That's fair.
So, to me, I think we just need more time.
There is, I mean, and realistically, even one weekend puts you into August.
Yeah.
And the first weekend in August wouldn't be the worst. I mean, again, you still get the heat component there, which is a big deal.
Yep.
That's
a great point. I mean, it would be very irresponsible to just hold the event like you would last year. Like nothing, no changes whatsoever.
That's where I'm coming from. I don't want to say.
I mean, there's not a lot that you can do outside of like
anything
up signs and suggesting social distancing.
I mean, that's what any business.
As simple as just having hand washing stations or hand sanitizer readily available. That's what I mean. Like,
I mean, that's
simple
really
things.
All you. Sure. That's all you can do. Sure. And that's what's going. If the event happens. Even if it happens as normal, mm-hmm. there will still be social distancing signs. There will be hand sanitizer at every basketball court.
Get an aerosol.
There will be a spray bottle with water and probably a little bit of bleach or whatever in a thing to wipe a rubber basketball down.
Yeah.
Like the things that can be done that are like really under the level.
And I think that's, in my personal opinion, that's...
Like maybe limit spectators?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Like maybe two per team
Think about this. This is a kind of, and this is my last point, and then we can move on. Right now, registration's not open for Silver Hoops.
Okay.
If you open registration right now, you are already behind. I mean, registration for Silver Hoops opens in like April or May historically. So we're probably already losing out. Last year was the biggest event with 150 teams.
Okay.
So if 150 teams brought 10 people, you're looking at 1,000 people right there. If you count the four players on the team plus other people. If we're even less than that, over that big space with the park, the swimming pool, the basketball courts, the whole area, you can safely fit 750 to 1,000 people in there and still maintain some semblance of social distancing.
So cool. I'm sticking with have it later.
Have it later and have some restrictions.
That's it.
Perfect.
That's what I got for
you. We're gonna knock this out in 20 minutes.
Will be fine, yeah.
Okay.
This is an interesting topic.
Okay. So the centerpiece on Friday, June 12th, was arsenic levels high in Canyon Elementary drinking water.
Yeah.
Kellogg school officials last Wednesday had a workshop to discuss their options, figure out what's going on. They talked to an engineer about the situation and have basically come down to there's three different options here, and then there's also several others that you can have combinations of these options, which is probably likely to happen. Coming from this workshop presented by engineer, let me turn to the page here, A9.
It's probably plumbing.
Steve Cords, an engineer with Welsh and Comer Engineering and Surveyors, presented that there's three points here, or there's three options to fix this issue. I guess I should probably talk.
What's the issue?
Yeah, the issue is, so arsenic levels, the arsenic levels are high in Canyon Elementary's drinking water, specifically the well that they draw from. The Kellogg School District does not own the well that they get it. They lease it from...
So get the whole point out before you go into that sidebar.
Okay.
Because I think the Kellogg not owning the well is
EPA important. Arsenic level minimums are 10 parts per billion. I can get more specific
billion
on that.
Or million?
Billion.
Okay. I've never actually heard parts per billion.
Parts per billion, it's 10. The EPA wants 5, but it's at 10.
Okay. Now, wouldn't you say like the healthy amount of... arsenic.
Zero.
Should be
zero. Yeah, you would
definitely
think.
Definitely.
You would
parts
think.
Per trillion.
Probably no natural healthy levels of arsenic.
That is 0% arsenic.
Probably.
Stance right now.
That well that the school district does not own, that also provides water to three other homes in the area, was on a 3-year cycle for testing for arsenic. The last 3-year cycle was 2017, 18, and 19. Mm-hmm. So the well's last test was in December of 2019, cutting it right to the end of the 3-year period.
Right.
That test came back at 10.7 parts per billion, so barely failing the test. When you fail a test, you are then kicked into yearly quarterly tests.
Mm-hmm.
So they went from 1 every 3 years to 4 every year. And since that was the end of their cycle, their next test was February of 2020, so just 2 months later.
Okay.
That test came back 13.5.
Jesus.
So
loves me. That
higher.
Is a lot of arsenic.
April, the second third test, second in the quarterly tests,
second
came back at 12.5. So slightly lower, but still not meeting levels.
Right.
With another test coming up in July, it is expected that they will fail this one. If this happens, the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality could declare a public health emergency, and then the ball would be in the Kellogg School District's court, which I don't see that they would continue on, to shut the school down until the problem is resolved.
Mm.
Now, the DEQ does not shut down the school. That's the Kellogg's standpoint. I find that that's very strange. But then again, I can't imagine what school district would hear this information and then continue having school. But then again, we live in the world. So in any case, so the ball would be in their court. It sounds like from what I've been told, that would happen. And then now the wheels are turning to try to get the problem fixed.
Okay, so three options. Give us the speedball.
Give us like the
speedball version.
Number one.
Quick and dirty.
Point of use treatment. This option would involve installing individual arsenic filters on all potable fixtures within the school, as well as each of the homes currently served by the well.
So a filtration system built into every sink, so when water comes
any out. Any drinking water faucet, yes.
Okay.
So anywhere where kids would, which is pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Washing is okay,
uh-huh.
And toilet water, that's all fine. It's just the stuff that you ingest, that's what needs to be treated.
Okay.
So drinking fountains, faucets... sinks that air in the cafeteria. Right.
Okay.
Lots of stuff.
That's a lot of filters.
Exactly. So there's a couple problems with this problem or with this path. One, while it is cost effective, it's the cheapest option.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Problem's only going to get worse.
Yep.
And it requires constant maintenance. You'll have to be changing out these filters all the time.
And it almost requires its own employee.
Almost. And it's funny because the other two options do require an individual employee, but we'll get there.
Fantastic.
The school district would have to basically, they would have to replace these filters all the time, and all that money would come out of their pocket.
Okay.
Also, The DEQ is interested in fixing the problem as a whole and getting everyone on board, not just the school. They want the three homes in compliance as well. Well, the homeowners and the owner of the well is not interested in this option.
So there are three other homes on this well.
Correct, including the owner of the well.
Private homes, yeah.
Right, no. Seeing in my brain, I was like, there's so many homes for all the water filtration.
Yeah.
There are three of them.
But they're not interested in this option. They don't want DEQ coming into the home and testing their water regularly. And
they're worried they put the fluoride in it.
Whatever their reason, they have made it clear that they're not interested in this option. But this option would be the most cost effective. And even as we get to the other options, this might even have to be implemented perhaps later on.
So option dose.
Central treatment involves installing a central treatment water machine into the current well that would treat the water directly at its source.
I know what those treatment plants look like on a large scale, mm-hmm. on a small scale. I can figure out what they look like, and I'm almost positive that that is probably more expensive.
Mm-hmm. So this option is the best one in the sense that it fixes the problem. Uh-huh. It is also the most expensive. This could be anywhere from $20,000 to $80,000, depending on what filtration system they get.
And it's attached with annual cost too, right?
Correct. You would have to have a full-time employee that is certified in maintaining this.
Creates a job.
There you go. That would be
money's
paid.
Money's got to come from somewhere.
That would be paid through. issues with this is, like I said, you would have to hire another person solely devoted to maintaining this, okay. A. And then B, the problem of Killing School District not owning the well is a problem, because while they would own the filtration system,
they would be employing a private person to maintain a filtration system.
And they're basically becoming a water district.
Yeah.
With three other people.
We don't need any more water districts.
Well, the school district has no interest in becoming a water district. They don't want to maintain people's water or anything.
That would also require voting, levying, and things of that
Correct.
Nature. Correct.
Okay. How dare you
use
those words
about
around me.
Around the school district.
That's right.
So number three.
Hard no.
Drill a new... number three, drill a new well.
Ugh.
Now... A little context, the school, Canyon Elementary, has tried this before. They have tried to dig a well in the past, and it came up dry. That's how they've gotten to their current situation where they have to lease the water from a privately owned well. Early estimates show that to dig a well would cost about $81,000, and that's just to dig the well. So this option is the one that the DEQ thinks that the school district should do, but for it to work, everything has to go perfectly.
There's a lot of risk involved.
Correct. So first off, they have to dig the well, and they have to hope that they hit water, because like they said, they've tried this once before and they didn't hit water.
They don't hit water, that's another 80K.
Well, at that point, it's probably done. They're not going to dump that much because the DEQ is not going to cover the cost of that. So under this option, the school district would be at once the school fails its test in July,
mm-hmm.
if the DEQ declares a public emergency, the school district would be open to getting a loan from the DEQ.
Oh, God.
That would allow them to cover the cost basically for all of this, and then they would be open to loan forgiveness. So essentially, DEQ would pay for all of this if everything goes according to plan.
Mm-hmm.
They still have to apply for the loan. They have to show that, you know, they did all their, they mined their P's and Q's, they crossed mm-hmm. their T's, dotted their I's, showed where all the water is, hired the experts, did all of that, all that fun stuff. They have to dig the well. They have to find water. If they find water, it's very possible that there's still arsenic in it. So if that's the case, then you have to do option two on top of option three, which is installing the treatment plant. And then, while that's being done, we also have to take in a time factor into all of this.
Sure.
School starts early September.
Yeah.
Bidding process alone to get this, to find somebody to dig the well, is roughly 3 weeks to a month.
Yeah. I got this. I'm ready.
Okay. And then, not to mention, so all of that has to happen. And then, once all that's done, say it doesn't get done in time for school. How long do you do some temporary fix until the well is constructed with its treatment plant?
Right.
you know, if it's a week or two, sure, just have the kids, you could push the start date back. You could have the kids do what they're currently doing now during COVID-19 and just work from home. Temporary solutions at the school, you could bring in bottled water. You can implement stage one as well, or option one as well, and temporarily put filters on everything. Mm-hmm. It's all about being cost effective. And all of those temporary measures, bottled water, trucking it in, whatever, that would not be covered under the loan.
Right.
So that would be money out of the district's pocket. It's been made very clear to me that if they have to pay for this in any way out of pocket, this is not good. If they're stuck with the bill fully on this, there's no fix here. The school district does not have $100,000+ to fix this. So it's very heavily dependent on the loan and loan forgiveness that would be given from DEQ. I think that's about it.
So disclaimer.
Yes.
Canyon Kid?
No. Kellogg.
Okay. So no Canyon Kids here.
Yep.
Two Kellogg School District graduates. So
very familiar with the Canyon Elementary situation.
At least familiar with its existence.
Okay. It's an old school. It's had its critics before because of its decrepit state.
And now it's like a magnet school, right?
So, mm-hmm. Yes. So some history on Canyon School. It was part of the Coeur d'Alene School District. It was a school, because it is still exists in Coonie County.
Mm-hmm.
It was a school that was kind of there to basically give rural kids access to something that didn't require
a physical location.
Yeah, they didn't have to go to all the way to Kellogg. They didn't have to go all the way to Coeur d'Alene. They didn't have to go all the way to Kootenai or St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an option. Now, there's some historical stuff that I'm missing, but it was closed, and the Kellogg School District swept in and annexed it, or had it annexed to them.
Gotcha.
From Kootenai County.
Okay.
Or from the Coeur d'Alene School District.
Sure.
So there is some consequence of if they lose that school, the annexation process or re-annexation or whatever.
What would happen with those kids is still up in the air.
It's still up in the air. So there is some weirdness there, but
roughly 60 kids that go to the school.
Yeah. So, Monica, you said you were ready to take this one on.
Yeah, what's the one where everybody has to pay in a little bit to get it on the houses in the school? What's that option look like?
Number two.
Not option number two.
Okay. Like, so, you're going to, I mean, the homeowners district will have to.
Kind of. The pseudo water district.
So, the Kellogg School District would then be responsible for maintaining clean water for private homes.
I mean, the Milo Creek Water District doesn't necessarily serve anyone other than it maintains.
Sure. I mean, shockingly so, to your point, the residents said they're totally on board with option number two if the school district is totally willing to pay for all of it.
I don't care for that at all.
No. That is
I think
unrealistic.
Digging a new well just seems
so scary.
Yeah, kind of wasteful.
We have to throw all the options out on the table. There is a fourth option here.
So the fourth option, and I'll probably just take chances late, is to close Canyon School.
This is not an original idea.
This is not an original idea. This is an idea, and me taking the lead on it is I am from here, and I am willing to bear the burden of my local people's disdain. I don't want Chance to be the subject of their anger because he is considered, as an outsider, even though he's been here for 4 years.
And I'm from Postville.
Canyon School is beloved in this school district.
It has the most supportive parent group of any of them.
Yeah, the best parent community, teacher community. Jenny Ferreira, the principal out there.
Love
is,
Jenny.
Is a top 10 person in my life. She is just a very sweet lady, and she works her butt off to keep that school open. That being said, because of the financial situation that the Kellogg School District is in, they have not been able to properly fund that school. So it is so reliant on people like Jenny and mm-hmm. the parents to make sure that it stays
open. They've had to. If it weren't for like those parents, that place would have been closed long ago.
Fire. If the building caught on fire, the superintendent, Nancy Larson, is on record saying, if the building caught on fire, there's a good chance kids could be caught inside a burning building. So the fact that we're just adding arsenic to the drinking water, and the only real option would be to, the only real option, and this is the option I'm almost positive they're going to go with, because that parent group out there, We have one who works in our office. Yep. And she says that she'll do everything, fight tooth and nail. Absolutely. I'm paraphrasing.
And let me make this clear. If option three, if everything goes right in option three,
is viable.
Then it's viable. It makes you dig a new well.
History is not on their side.
There are a lot of obstacles, and if one thing, and again, even if everything goes right, but if it takes too long, mm-hmm. Between digging the well, getting it ready, and then installing the treatment, if there is arsenic present, which there is a possible, then again, what if they hit no water? They've tried this once before.
So my suggestion, after we look at all of this, mm-hmm. Would be, if you want to keep the Canyon School or Canyon School building open long term, you have to close it for at least a year.
Hmm.
And you have to move the kids out of that building.
Temporarily, so we can get it back up to code.
Pinehurst, and then give people a year to go in there and make the alterations.
Mm-hmm.
See, one, because if they shoot a well in and they miss and they screw up or this doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah, that's
done. All these kids are in the school. Then we're ripping them out of their classroom, out of their adjusted environment, and putting them in another school anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well just start them in another building, give them a year. Give your maintenance crew a year to figure out what they're going to do, because if it turns out to be a lost cause, then you've already transitioned these kids.
And this is clearly from a fiscal standpoint, in the sense that we are not going for a second doubting the level of education that those kids get at Canyon Elementary. In fact, that is their strong point, is that those kids have great test scores.
Monica mentioned, it's a science magnet school, so there's an emphasis on things like STEM.
They do a fantastic job out there. It is not, those kids aren't getting a good education anyway kind of thing. That is not the argument here. Right. It's very unfortunate that their building is just not cooperating with them.
No, and the building is, it's old. It's been old. It's needed repairs. It really is, they have classes that are like two mm-hmm. grades per classroom.
Yep.
There's a lot of things that could be done.
Money and time is definitely pushing up against their situation. They need to know if they've got, if the money's covered by DEQ, and that's a big if, because they still have to apply for the loan, and this takes time. I was told by Anna Moody, who I talked to in the story, compare it to the situation, the Pinehurst water pipes breaking 2-3 years ago. It was really cold out, and
you saw with Panhandle Health.
What's that?
Is she with DEQ?
She's DEQ. She's
I don't
DEQ.
Know her title there, but she's like the water
person.
She's DEQ.
But remember back 3 years ago, those lines were frozen. They burst. And it seemed like a month or more that people were posting about having to, hose in water from their neighbors and whatnot. So while that project was covered by a DEQ grant or a loan that was then forgiven, which kind of sounds like they go hand in hand. Like they give the loan. They can't read. They don't give grants. Right. They give loans. But this loan is immediate. If they follow through all the protocols, they get forgiveness immediately. Right. So they ended up getting that. But that was a 2-3 year long process.
Yeah.
So in order to do this, regardless if they get accepted for the loan or not, Kellogg School District has to pay the money out of pocket.
So
they have the upfront costs, and then they will be reimbursed later on.
That takes us to another issue.
Yes. And Kellogg School District does not have $100,000+.
And getting extra money out of their voting public is
already been a task.
Becoming almost near impossible. One, due to the structural framework for how elections work when it mm-hmm. comes to facilities and maintenance stuff, mm-hmm. which this directly falls under. The I still will get on my soapbox and say supermajorities are garbage and in a very unfair way for school districts to have to exist by. But
I'm not going to say in all circumstances, but definitely in this one for sure.
People do not want to fund things that are, in their mind, they've already written off. And the Canyon School District, when a survey was done a few years ago where they were trying to determine what building they were going to close, if my memory serves me right, after the old Kellogg Middle School, which is now the administrative annex, which is mm-hmm. no mm-hmm. students in it, the one right behind it was Canyon School.
Canyon now has the highest maintenance costs of any building.
Actually, and I believe it's always had one of the highest costs to just operate the building.
Oh, wow.
Because of
okay.
the way that you have to heat it.
Oh, I see.
An ancient heating system. Now, don't quote me on that. That could be me recalling something. But if my memory serves me right, and I covered that.
Mm.
I covered that pretty extensively.
Yep.
I don't know that you are going to get because you can't just isolate this to the Canyon community.
Yep.
If the Kellogg School District and the Kellogg voting public thinks that any bit of their tax dollars are going to fund a school that they have already deemed beyond repair, they're going to raise hell about it.
Yep. So we'll wrap this up. My personal opinion on this is we should do everything within reason to try to save Canyon Elementary. But if the school district is going to be stuck with a $100,000 plus bill that they're not going to get, they're not going to see the money back for years or not at all. Mm-hmm. I think the tough decision has to be made. I think if everything, it's not like we just say, oh, this is too much effort. I'm not saying that. If everything can be done according to plan and we can start school up. But like you said, when you close the school for a year and we see how much money we're going to, in your example, we close the school for a year. How much money are we saving keeping that school closed for a year?
I mean, and they'll have that information in front of them.
There you go. So, I mean, it's, you might look at it and you go,
considering that people already get bused into Kellogg.
I do want to add one component of this is there is a strong argument here because the Canyon parents, one of their main arguments to keep the building open is that Pinehurst is overcrowded.
Yeah.
And those kids would have to be, most if not all those kids would go to Pinehurst Elementary if Canyon's closed.
Yeah.
And that is, as far as our research has shown, that yes, that is a valid point. Pinehurst Elementary is close, or
Pinehurst is more than capable of holding 60 more kids.
Sure, but it's
the disbursement of them.
You're not going to have the student to teacher ratios that you would at Canyon.
If you pose the question though, the option of either you're going to have your kids go to Pinehurst, where it's like maybe overcrowded, or have your kids taught online, or you have to homeschool them.
Which it's the difference of 10 person classrooms versus 20 person classrooms.
And there is enough. I think I can speak pretty candidly here and say, I know there is enough vitriol from the parent community out there and stubbornness from the parent community out there that they would say that they would rather homeschool kids than send their kids to another school.
Yep.
And I understand why. Like we said, you get a good education at Canyon.
I get it.
They a lot of opportunities.
I get it. I sympathize. I just
don't know. Like I said, I think the best option is to close it for a year. Give the people the time to at least look at the well. See what it's going to take to maintain those filters.
Yeah.
See what it's going to take to do all these
things. Got to weigh the costs.
And yeah. But you have 2 months. Two and a half
But months. You can't let it bring the entire school district down.
No. This well and that building.
Like you can't throw all the money. Like say, I don't know if this is true or not, but let's assume, say Kellogg School District has a savings account that's saved up. We can't burn the entire savings account on a building that very possibly might have a brand new, fantastic, unique issue.
Are you going to blow all of your money on 6% of your
6% of your kids, and then not to mention a building that may very well have another problem in
I mean, you have 1,000 kids in the district, and or right around 1,000, and 60 of them are going to take the sole focus of your money. That's a tough sell.
Yep.
So
absolutely, Monica.
I honestly, a little bit of a cop out.
Okay.
Because my blood sugar is getting real low. It's lunchtime. I really like Josh's take on this one.
Okay.
I mean, you guys know how I feel about taking times to suss stuff out, so yep.
Yeah,
I'm on board with that. Give them some time. Give them the option of maybe not necessarily, yeah, I guess more or less it would be the option of homeschool your kids, or if you want them to go to Pinehurst, they can go to Pinehurst and let them figure it out that way.
I think that's the, unfortunately, more time is one of the major problems here. Because if it's, like I said before, if they got to push school out 2 weeks, sure. Let's do the bottled water. Let's do the temporary solution until this is done.
It just doesn't sound like
Right. If I go up in increments, how long can you guys pallet that? A month? 2 months? 3 months?
Or maybe even like in the next couple months, like something might pop up where they're like, oh, this is a great option. Like this school in this county and wherever is doing this. Like, why don't we try this?
Sure.
Sure. That perfect kind of, no, almost perfect. There's not going to be a perfect solution at all, but just an even better solution. So they might get it figured out by the time school
and
starts.
And all of these options are heavily reliant on the DEQ covering the costs.
Right.
If they don't, we're not even talking about these options. The Kellogg School District does not have the money to do this.
Right.
So
tough sell.
It is a tough sell. It's a tough issue. But all right, we're going to forego our regional headlines. This has been a long episode, but
Good discussion.
Good discussion for sure. Some very important topics. Monica, thank you for coming in as always.
Thank you guys.
I feel like we shouldn't have to thank you anymore. You're part of the crew now.
Yeah.
So
you got
mic'd up and you're no longer.
I lost my second half poor planning on my part.
Yeah. Hey, on a bright note, you're more than just 2/3 of a person now.
Thank you so much. I have my own mic.
Not like 100 years ago that got changed, but getting
you that mic. But now it's 2020.
Now you're legit. Once again, we'd like to thank Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty. It's a great time to sell your house because inventory is low, and Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty is a lifelong member of the Silver Valley. She's a local realtor who is well-connected and knows every nook and cranny of our beautiful community. Contact Julie at 208-659-1764. Julie Zook is your best friend in real estate.
Boy, that read really similar to something we just heard.
I think so.
That's a beautiful weird ad.
I feel like Julie's copied one of our other ads.
She knows what's up.
I feel like we got some really good friends in our ads.
I agree. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff. All the stories that we have talked about can be found in our print products or on ShoshoneNewsPress.com. Whatever platform that you listen in on, please subscribe and leave a positive review. Those really help us get noticed and get the word out there for people. As always, if you guys are interested in providing us feedback or purchasing an ad, you can call our office at 208-752-1120. And that's it. Did I miss anything?
No.
I just want to give a shout out to my Uncle Jimmy.
Okay.
And my Auntie Dee. Uncle Jimmy's been listening quite a bit. So, Uncle Jimmy, if you made it through this, thank you. And hello, and thanks for reminding me not to curse.
Hey!
Doing good. We didn't even use our one cuss word. Good job, gang.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.